Welcome in to the Let It Fly podcast. Ravi Lula and Taylor Stormberg here with you today. We're going to try and knock these things out at least once a week for you. You know, if there's some breaking news or anything, we'll get on and get an emergency podcast going for you. But we'll try and go at least once a week and get you everything you need to know as Creighton goes throughout this hopefully historic season. Don't want to get too far ahead of myself here, but I'm already trying to figure out my trip to the Final Four. So, Taylor, before we get into that, how are you? How was your off season?
Hey, Ravi, it's good to be back. Can't believe how fast basketball season is already upon us. But off season was great. I've been putting a lot of time in at the gym. I've been getting my shots up.
Okay.
And I think I'm ready to go. I don't know if Mac has any room left on the bench for me this year, but I feel like I'm ready.
Well, let's start there, man, because the rotation is kind of packed. I'm not doubting the skill set you're bringing to the table, but there's some guys that I don't think are going to see minutes that probably would see minutes on just about every other Big East roster in the conference here. So the starters are pretty self-explanatory, right? You got Kalkbrenner. You're going to have Baylor Shireman coming in as the touted transfer. You're going to have Arthur Kaluma, Trey Alexander, and Ryan Nemhard coming back off the injury. That's the starting five, no-brainer, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. I mean, that team that finished out last year and honestly started last year, I mean, those are your guys, right? I mean, those four, you know, minus Hawk, obviously, and we can touch on that later in this episode. But, I mean, those four are truly the core of your organization, of your team. They have built the culture all of last year and had that amazing run in the back half of the season, even without R2 and in the final two games without Kalkbrenner. And then you add Summit Player of the Year and Baylor Shireman. And I mean, on paper, Ravi, at best Creighton lineup, best starting five, I think that Coach Mack has had.
Yeah, I think, well, not just the starting five, but you go a little bit deeper, right? So you finally have a legitimate backup big. You don't have to go small ball unless you actually want to, with former Louisville commit Frederick King, who ended up coming to Creighton. That was a huge pickup. That dude looks like a grown man already. And then you've got some combination of Mason Miller and who am I thinking of? Who am I missing at forward besides Mason?
Yeah, I mean, you've got Mason, and that's pretty much it as far as that goes. I kind of think they're looking at redshirting Jason Green, the Miller North product.
Yep.
So I don't think he'll see any time at the three or four this year. But you know, those guys, as far as bigs go, right? You've got your two fives, and then you've got Art Baylor and Mason Miller.
So I think they're going to see a lot of three guard lineups when they go to the bench there, because you've got a ton of guards. You've got, first and foremost, Francisco Farabello, the transfer from TCU. He was the first guy off the bench in the Drury scrimmage. I think some people, or exhibition, I guess, scrimmage, what's it? Who cares? I think some people were probably surprised that he was the first guy off the bench.
No, I do too. And if you go back to last year, I mean, his minutes at TCU, I mean, he was the sixth man at TCU as well, but he finished a lot of those games, right? And a team that took Arizona and all the way down to the final minutes in the NCAA tournament. So obviously Mac and his staff see something in Francisco that, you know, they didn't have last year, right? They didn't really have that guy that could come off of the bench and also close games, right? Mm-hmm. We saw them always going back to that original five, and now you've just got so many options. But I think, you know, with the TCU transfer, he's going to be pretty special, and I think you'll see him, you know, he might even close out a couple of those close games as the season goes on.
Yeah, and we'll get to some of the lineups and stuff we like, I'm sure. But I thought he looked really, really good in the exhibition. I know his numbers don't jump off the page, but when he gets on the floor, you just see that guy, and you know he can play some ball. So I'm really excited about what he brings to the team. He's actually like a really perfect fit for this team because of the skill set he brings to the table. He can play either guard spot. He shot it at 40% from three for his career, and he doesn't need the basketball. And with a team that's got Nembhard, Alexander, Art, and Baylor, guys that all need the basketball, having a guy that can complement those guys without having to dominate the ball is huge.
It is. And a guy that can help space the floor, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, create a lot of those ISO situations on single sides and on same sides. And it just allows, you know, Creighton to play a little bit more free, knowing that you've got Francisco sitting in the corner or maybe floating and rotating back into a spot after a drive. And and like you said, Ravi, career, you know, north of 40% three-point shooter. And that's somebody that Creighton didn't really have last year, right? I mean, Ryan Hawkins, touted three-point shooter, and he really struggled to start the year. He kind of found it a little bit and then lost it towards the end. But to have that weapon on your bench, a guy who's seasoned, he's a veteran, knows how to play the game, can see the game through the coach's lens as well, I think that's really going to help this Jays team as they continue to progress in that second year, right, with all of those freshmen from last year.
Absolutely. And then another guy that I'm sure people are wondering about, Sharif Mitchell, missed basically all of last year with some nagging groin, hamstring, hip injuries. He's back. Now, people were worried because he didn't play in the exhibition. Max said in the postgame presser that was a disciplinary issue carried over from the summer. He is not injured. He's good to go. That was just an internal thing that they were handling there. I think that Sharif is going to play a much bigger role on this team than maybe really anybody anticipated. I wasn't even sure at the end of last year if he was coming back.
Oh, I completely agree, Ravi. I mean, it seems like there's not enough minutes for Coach Mack and staff to fit Sharif in, but he brings such an elevated presence on the defensive side that he will find time to play, right? Whether it's 4-minute stretches and, you know, to spree and spell R2, but he has to be a big part of this team's success, right? I mean, we'll talk about the hype, we'll talk about the expectations, but Sharif Mitchell, he has to be an integral part of this team if they're going to make a deep run because of his defensive presence alone. And, you know, we haven't even talked about the strides that the staff have said he's made on the offensive end and just his quickness with the basketball, his ability to make decisions. And, you know, as we've been hearing, maybe a little bit better of a three-point shooter than he has been over the last 3 years. So, you know, and after sitting out for an entire year, you know, it seems like a lifetime. So, you know, he's ready. He's ready to go.
Well, and I think something that if you're just a Creighton fan and you didn't necessarily follow Sharif real closely in high school, that dude was a bucket in high school. He averaged almost 30 points a game in high school, which with those short quarters and everything, that's really, really hard to do. I think he was somewhere in the neighborhood of 28 his last year at Burke. He was a walking certified bucket. And so there's a level to his offensive game there that we really have only seen glimpses of here at Creighton. I'm not saying he's going to go out there and score 20 a night, but he's capable of more offensively than we've ever really seen from him, which is a credit to him that he's kind of owned a role and still been a critical part of a team. I mean, he was getting, I think, almost 20 minutes a game on that Sweet 16 team. So he's contributed to good winning basketball before. So I think he's going to play a big part. Another guy that I think is going to be a little bit more prominent than maybe we realized at first was true freshman Ben Stolzberg.
Yeah, Ben comes in as a highly touted kid out of California. And you talk about certified bucket getter, Robbie.
Yes.
This kid can fill it up. And, you know, listening to some of Max post-game stuff and his preseason dialogue, you know, they really like this kid, and they're gonna struggle to find minutes for him because you've got Sharif that will likely come off the bench prior to Ben getting his chance. And, you know, this kid, they've compared him already to Marcus Zigorowski, you know, somebody that can go get yourself a bucket. And you know,
he's a little bigger though. He's a little bigger than Marcus.
A little bigger, a little stronger than Marcus was when he came in as a freshman. But this kid really knows how to play on the offensive side of the ball, and excited to watch his growth. And you know, as a freshman, you have really good days and you have some really bad days. And so, you know, watching his progression throughout the course of the season, while, you know, likely getting limited minutes here or there, you know, that's going to be tough for him, right? You come in as such a highly touted kid and a highly touted prospect, you know, you expect to play. And he's got two, three, if not four guys in the rotation that are going to see minutes before he gets his time to shine.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably looking at being the ninth man on this roster at best. It depends on, you know, I don't think, you tell me if I'm wrong here, I don't think John Christofilos is going to beat him out for any minutes at this point. So I think you're looking at Schultzberg as being your ninth guy, which he probably will get some minutes in that role. But probably not a ton. You're probably looking at 7, maybe 8 minutes a game, and pretty inconsistent minutes throughout the season, depending on the place you're at. Let me throw a scenario at you, though, with the kind of lineups we're talking about here. We saw at the end of last year without Ryan Nemhard, and I don't want anybody to take this as me saying anything bad about Ryan Nemhard before I even start, okay? I can hear the Twitter trolls getting at me already. Ryan Nemhard is a really, really good basketball player, and he was, if they didn't have him last year early in the season, I don't know how many games they would have won, okay? But here's the scenario. We saw Trey Alexander really grow as a primary ball handler at the end of the season, and I would argue against the eventual national champion, including multiple NBA draft picks, Trey Alexander was the best player on the floor in that game. You've also got Baylor Shireman, who is an incredible playmaker at the forward spot. You've also got Francisco Farabello, who is a really good combo guard, can kind of do whatever you need him to do. Those are three guys right there that can handle the ball and playmake and score. And they're all a lot bigger than Ryan Nemhard. Ryan Nemhard's a pretty small guy, especially against some of these Big East guards. Can you see a scenario in which, for lineup purposes, Ryan Nemhard maybe is on the outside looking in a little bit? I'm not saying on a regular basis, but there's some really big guards in this league that Ryan Nemhard is probably going to struggle with defensively. And when you've got other options, could you see Mac turning to those other options?
Robbie, the Twitter trolls are already on you, man. They're already on you. I feel bad. The season hasn't even kicked off yet. You bring up a solid point. You do. It is a good point. And, you know, I personally don't think that that's going to happen, right? Unless there's a big-time shooting slump, unless there is a, you know, a continuation.
Did a turnover bug last year.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Is it, you know, if there's a continuation of the turnover problem that we saw last year, I think you could certainly see that. But the one thing that is playing in his favor is hearing Greg McDermott talk about the pace of play that Creighton wants to play at this season. And with R2 at the point, you really do get that ultra fast, ultra speedy pace of play. And there's not another guy on the roster that's going to be able to do that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Sharif loves to play fast, can sometimes get a little bit too far out in front of his skis, but you do have that control with a chaotic and hectic pace in Ryan Nemhard. And so I think, you know, for the majority of this season, if not the whole season, that's going to be Mac's go-to guy. I mean, you saw him put the ball in his hands so many different times last season, whether it was, you know, early in the game or even a couple late game heroic shots that we were able to see from him going full court, coast to coast. And so, you know, what I do like about R2 is that he is a team guy. Right. He is a team first guy. And so if that does happen, right, in the unlikely scenario, if there is a certain game where he's not, maybe he's just not feeling it, maybe he's not on, you know, I think he will be okay, you know, knowing that, hey, this lineup is working. Like I'm here for the team and I want to make sure that we come out of here with a W.
That's a really good point. And I want to remind people as well, because he was so ball dominant last year because he had to be, right? Early on in the season, especially, there just was no offense outside of a Ryan Nemhard pick and roll, basically. And that's not the player that he had been most of his life. If you go back, if you watch him at all at Montverde, if you watch him at all with the Canadian national team, he's used to deferring, at least on shots, to other guys. He's very good at facilitating and will pick his spots in terms of, okay, we need a bucket here and nobody's really going to get it. I can go get one here, things like that. And I think that was the concern for some people was, okay, is, you know, there's only one basketball and you got three or four guys who are probably going to need it a lot of the time. I think Nemhard is a lot more of a natural facilitator than we saw last year because he was forced into a position because of just what the roster was. And because Trey and Art took a little bit longer to come along, that he had to take more of an offensive burden than honestly he was probably comfortable with. And I think that's what led to a lot of the turnovers that we talked about.
Yeah, no, I agree too. I mean, he really did have to take on that ball dominant role as a point guard and score as a point guard because they, quite frankly, they just needed production. Right? They needed somebody that can put the ball in the basket. And, you know, this season, I think what you'll see is the floor is going to be so much more space that, you know, he's not going to have a lot of those same turnover problems that he did have, you know, and he's going to be able to find guys. And, you know, I think that's going to be one of the keys to watch this season is Creighton's 3-point shooting ability, right? You had a lot of freshmen last year taking threes, and now those guys are a year older. They've been in the gym all summer. They're used to the pace of play, the physicality, and that line moving back from the high school. And so what you're going to see is that tick up, right? I mean, Creighton was north of 300th in the nation in 3-point shooting percentage at 30% last year. And so what I think you're going to see this season is that slowly start to tick, 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 and tick up, right? You got a guy like Farabello that's coming in, Shireman's coming in, great shooters. But now you've got R2 able to get himself downhill with that speed and then be able to spray to some wide open shooters where you just step in and knock it down. So I'm excited to see his progression, right? Again, a lot of hype for Ryan Nemhard, you know, picked as one of the top 10 sophomores this season to watch, and excited for him to really be able to display what he's capable of.
Okay, so before we move on, I want to make sure I don't forget about anybody. Is there anybody else on the roster that you wanted to take a minute to talk about and what you thought they were going to bring to the table this season? I think we covered everybody I think is going to be in the rotation, but do we need to spend another minute on somebody that we haven't spent enough time on yet?
You know, it sounds weird saying this, Robbie, but you know, I still think that Trey Alexander is not talked about enough.
I agree. I mean,
this is a guy, right?
He's my guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You see the preseason Big East first team, second team, third team, honorable mention. He's nowhere to be found.
It was a joke.
Nowhere to be found, right? And as you mentioned, you know, I'd say one, if not two, of the best players on the floor against Kansas in that game to go to the Sweet 16 last year. And I can't believe it. And I mean, hearing Greg McDermott talk, he single-handedly pointed out Trey as the guy who's gotten better this season, right? And so I think what you're going to see is a guy that's got a lot of swagger. He's got a lot of confidence, and he knows that it doesn't matter whether I'm on the ball, I'm off the ball, I'm going to be able to facilitate, make plays for my teammates, and also figure out how I can go ahead and get myself mine. You know, one of the things that he's talked about personally is his ability to shoot the three ball. And so I think in order for him to really have success this season, it is going to be about him knocking down some of those outside shots. You know, last year we saw him at the end of the season get into the paint, pivot, jump stop, kind of hit that nice little turnaround fadeaway, and that was kind of his go-to move, but he's got to be able to be consistent from the outside. But other than that, you know, I think him and his presence on the defensive end is going to be something that we're going to talk about. You know, we're going to have to find, Creighton's going to have to find somebody that's going to be a lockdown defender. You know, I think R2's got the quickness to do that, but doesn't have the size. And you know, you've got Trey, somebody who's a coach's son, somebody who's been in those big moments that we saw last year, that's going to be a great two-way player for Creighton this season.
Yeah, I think he's got the physicality. You've also got Art, who's got all of the physical things you would want to guard some of those bigger guys in the Big East, the forwards and the big guards. And there is a nice little security blanket back there in Ryan Kalkbrenner, who we hadn't really talked a ton about yet either. There's just a lot of really good players on this team. I think there's a chance, even as high as I am on Trey Alexander, I think there's a chance that Ryan Kalkbrenner is the best player in the league this year. I don't think that's out of the question at all. So, you know, and then you're talking about Arthur Kaluma, who very well could be a first round draft pick in the NBA next year. So there's a lot of guys, and I'm sure we'll talk about them as we go throughout the season. But I think that's what your rotation is going to be. You're going to have your five starters: Kalkbrenner, Kaluma, Shireman, Trey, and Nembhard. I think your backups are going to be Frederick King, Mason Miller, Ben Schultzberg, and Sharif Mitchell. I think that's going to be kind of your nine-man rotation going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't forget Francisco, because he's going to be coming off the bench.
Oh my gosh,
he's going to be ready to chuck that ball when he gets off the bench. I'm excited to watch him and play this year too.
I think Bello will get minutes in front of Schultzberg. I was just talking about how much I liked him, and I just left him off my list.
Cool to see, Robin, we haven't had this problem in quite some time, right? Where you've got a legit 10 guys that could all be starting at a high Division I level.
Last year we barely had five scholarship guys at the end of the season. So that was a problem.
Basically played with three on five against the national champions and gave them a run for their money, gave them the best run for their money they had in the NCAA tournament.
Absolutely. All right. So let's start with let's go game by game, and then we can give our official predictions in terms of record and also I want to get us on record and say how we think this team's going to do in terms of finishing up in the NCAA tournament. I know it's about matchups. I'm not going to let you cop out of it. We're going to make a prediction here today. All right. So let's try and come to a consensus on the schedule rather than doing two different predictions here. Let's try and come to some agreement. How does that sound?
That sounds great. Let's do it.
All right, so I'm just going to do four of these at once. St. Thomas, North Dakota, Holy Cross, UC Riverside. We're calling that 4-0, right?
You know, yes, absolutely. 4-0 to start the season.
I can't tell if you're messing with me or not.
All great games at home. Get the crowd going, right? Get these guys ready to go. That'll be a good, solid four-game stretch at home through November. Quick, too. I mean, it's coming up on Monday, right? Two games a week, and then they're headed off to Maui.
All right, so they're out in Maui, starting with Texas Tech. Now, Maui's a little tricky because we don't know exactly after Texas Tech who they're going to end up playing. So let's predict the first two, and then we'll leave the third one off because we have no idea who they'll play.
Okay.
So Texas Tech, how are you feeling about that one first game in Maui?
I think that's a W. I really do. Okay. I mean, Texas Tech, top 25 team to start the year, but I see Creighton ready for that game. I really do, and then I think they're probably going to get a really good crack at a fantastic team in Arkansas the next day.
Okay, so you think they're getting Arkansas in day two? Mm-hmm. So we'll go with that. I'm not worried about if they get Louisville. I'm just not. So we'll call that a W if they get Louisville, but let's go on the assumption they're going to get Arkansas here. That's a really, really good team. That's a team that's super physical, super good defensively. This is a really good early test for Creighton is Arkansas. What are your thoughts on that one?
I don't feel quite as confident about that one. I mean, I'm going back to that Iowa State game, and I don't know how they're going to handle that type of pressure on the defensive end.
With better athletes than Iowa State had, frankly.
Oh, 100%. 100%, you know. Yeah.
Now, Creighton's number two, but still. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you never know, right? I mean, this is really one of two things, right? Arkansas runs Creighton wild defensively, or Creighton runs Arkansas out of the gym by being able to break a lot of that pressure and knocking down a ton of open shots. So,
which we've seen them do before, right?
Against some of these really high pressure teams this early in the season,
where they're, you know, sometimes their pressure isn't quite dialed in the way it is later in the year.
Oh, 100%. That's exactly
what Creighton has given some of these teams trouble because they break the press and then they're just wide open on the offensive end of the court. I'm leaning towards an L here.
I would agree.
Yeah, so let's we'll call that one an L. We're going to skip the third game in Maui because we don't know who they're playing yet. So that puts us at we're going to mark down one L on the season, and we're going to call it Arkansas. There we go. So that takes us to Texas in Austin on December 1st, the Christian Bishop revenge game. What are you thinking about? Listen, that's a good Texas team. Chris Beard's a really good coach. This is Creighton is challenging themselves here early.
No, they are, and it's going to be a great test to see what type of team is this made of. I mean, this is a potentially 3-game stretch that could be NCAA tournament teams, and so for them to have this in November and then creep into December 1st, I mean, what a great experience for this team to have to carry forward as they move into Big East play later in the month and then ultimately NCAA tournament, right? Because these games are back to back to back, and then fly down to Texas and you're playing again. So I think this is going to be a great test, and I think Mac will shape it up like that, where, you know, hey, boys, this is a really authentic and realistic look at what the NCAA tournament could be, you know, once you get past it, that first round game. So I think that they get a W down in Texas. I really do. I think, you know, Arkansas is a different beast, but I think that they match up really well against Texas. And you know, there's always that Christian Bishop factor, and a little something extra to play for. But I think they do go on the road and get a pretty decent win at Texas.
Yeah, I think that might be their kind of first statement win of the season, is that road game at Texas. Listen, Texas is a quality team. They do sometimes struggle to score a little bit with the way they play defense. They don't always have that balanced out on the other end of the floor. I'm going to call this a win as well, so we'll stick with that there. After that, we've got Nebraska coming in. That's an obvious. I mean, that's just a W, right? Like, come on.
Yeah. Nope. They're 100%. Move forward. Move on. Enough said, Ravi. Enough said.
Not even worth discussing. All right, so we've got two in Vegas after that, BYU and Arizona State. I've got both of these as W's. Agree or disagree?
I completely agree. I think it'll be a fun time in Las Vegas. You know, talking to a lot of Creighton fans, I think there's going to be a pretty good contingent traveling to Las Vegas for that that nice little 2-game stretch. But BYU, Arizona State, both quality opponents. But I think they continue that hot streak after that win at Texas and roll into Big East play.
All right. So I believe, if my math is correct, we've got just the one loss predicted to Arkansas, and that puts them at, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That puts us at 10-1 in the non-con. Does that sound right?
I think that sounds right. I'm not sure if they, you know, if they do lose to Arkansas, I'm not sure if they'll play a third game or not in Maui. Sometimes
it just depends. Guaranteed 3.
I think you're guaranteed 3. So they, even if they lost to Arkansas, I do believe that they'd have another tough test, because that's a pretty sturdy field.
Oh yeah, that's
down in Hawaii.
Best field every year.
It is. So, you know, they'd have probably another tough matchup the next day if they did lose to Arkansas.
Yeah, I'm just assuming a win because I'm an optimist, but we'll call it 10-1, just so we have the right number of games on the non-con. But
perfect.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page there. All right. So then they start start the conference schedule at Marquette on December 16th. That's a tough place to play. How do you feel about Marquette this year?
I honestly don't think they're going to be that good. I really don't. I hate saying that without watching a single minute of them playing, but looking at their roster right now, I don't think that they're going to be able to compete with, you know, teams like Creighton, like Xavier, like Villanova, who are at the top of the Big East this season. I don't see Marquette fitting into that upper echelon of Big East basketball this year.
Yeah, I totally agree. And they had some defections in the offseason as well that I think make it challenging for them. Butler and DePaul and Seton Hall, boom, 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 back to back at home over the course of about 10 days. I'm guessing we both have Butler and DePaul as W's. Is that fair?
That is fair. I completely agree. So that'd be what, 4-0 to start the Big East Conference?
3-0, unless you're counting Seton Hall as a W-2 already. Is that?
There we go. Sorry. Yes. Sorry. Now we're into the new year. We're into 2023.
Yep. So we're 3-0 going into Seton Hall. Probably their first test of the season. I don't know how good Seton Hall is this year, though.
Oh, I mean, I think they're going to be pretty decent this year. You know, obviously, I think that matchup is going to be a little bit different, just because head coach wise, not looking at the same guy across the aisle. But I do think that they get a win at home against Seton Hall.
Can I just? This is probably an unpopular take. I don't think Shaheen Holloway is that good of a coach. I think he's fine. Like, I think he's fine. Yeah. But if St. Peter's doesn't win a couple games as a 15 seed, he's not the head coach at Seton Hall. So you made your decision based on two random games? That seems idiotic to me.
You know, some people would say he maximized the potential of that team, Ravi, but it doesn't sound like you're one of them.
Well, listen, I think he maximized the potential of that team, but that's a really different job than Seton Hall is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's no expectations, right? You made the NCAA tournament, and that, oh my gosh, you're the best coach that we've had in the
history of the school. But if he loses in round one, he's not getting that call from Seton Hall. So because he got a couple upsets in March, all of a sudden he's a different coach that is qualified to be in a Power 5 league? I don't know that I buy it. I need to see it. I need it proved to me.
Well, I mean, it's gonna hit him in the face pretty hard. I mean, this is not a very forgiving league, and so, you know, if he comes out and they flop to start Big East play, you know, his back is gonna be against the wall trying to figure out how to claw himself out of this situation. But for purposes of our conversation, Ravi,
yes,
I do believe that Creighton gets a W at home against Seton Hall.
I agree. Sorry, I got distracted. I just, you know, there's not a lot of NJITs on the schedule in the Big East. So I'm not sure that he's going to get the freebies that he got with the Peacocks.
NJITs.
That's a team they play, man.
I know.
All right. So we've got after 4-0 to start the league play. They head on the road at Connecticut, at Xavier, back-to-back on a Saturday and Wednesday. First real test of the season. I'm going to say they split these.
I was thinking the same thing.
I'm going to assume they beat UConn because they always beat UConn, although they probably will lose at some point to UConn. But Xavier's, I think, going to be pretty good this year, so I probably lean towards they win at UConn, they lose at Xavier, but I think they split it one way or another.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I would imagine they would come home during this stretch. But if not, right, if they went straight from, you know, to UConn and then flew to Cincinnati and stayed in Cincinnati, that's going to be a grueling week on the road the entire time. You know how that always plays a pretty big factor in that second game. And then you've got a Wednesday night game at Xavier, who's going to be hungry to be Creighton this year. They always are, but Creighton being picked top dogs in the Big East this season, Xavier's going to have something to say about that.
Yeah, I agree. I just always assume Xavier's going to underachieve, but they've got a new head coach and everything now. So, you can't rely on the ineptitude of Travis Steele anymore as much as you used to. So, which I'm sure I will miss dearly in the Big East, but
very much.
I do think Xavier's going to be solid this year. So we agree there. They're going to split. Then they come back home for Providence. I'm going to call this a win. Usually they play Providence pretty well at home. I'm going to assume they're going to lose in Rhode Island because they always lose in Rhode Island, but I'm going to call this one a win.
Yep, I agree. The next game is going to be a point of controversy, I think.
They play terrible at Hinkle.
They
just play awful at Hinkle. Can they actually win a game at Hinkle?
I mean, Ravi, I have called a lot of games at Hinkle Fieldhouse, and I have yet to walk away with a win. So I'm not very optimistic, even though Butler is going to be pretty dang
trash.
They're going to be very bad this season. I'm assuming that they're going to lose one of these, lower tier Big East games at some point.
Yeah.
And this one seems like a logical one just because it is at Hinkle.
Yeah, I actually agree with you there. They play like trash at Hinkle. I always convince myself that they're not going to play like trash at Hinkle, and they still always play like trash at Hinkle. So I blame it on the weird Hoosier voodoo or something that they did in that gym.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we agree there that that's a loss.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is going to be crazy, but, I mean, the line for this game is going to be like 15 points, and somehow Butler's going to have the ball with a tie game with with 40 seconds left.
And they'll probably get one of those stupid Indianapolis refs, give them a cheap call, and they'll make a couple free throws to win the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Creighton will go 2 of 25 from three.
Yeah. Cause their floor's pointed the wrong direction.
Yeah, it is. It is. The wind is a huge factor in that.
True. There's a lot of drafts in that building. It's very old. all right. So we both agree they lose at Butler. St. John's and Xavier at home, back to back. I've got those both as W's.
St. John's, absolutely. This Xavier game gives me PTSD, Ravi, because this was the pink out game last season. Creighton up 20 points at halftime. Before people could get back from the Bud Light zone, it was about a 3-point ball game. So I do think that, especially if they lose, in Cincinnati,
I do
believe that, Coach Mack's staff will be ready for this one. I think a big theme, as is every year, but holding court in conference play is just such a big thing. And so, pink out game against Xavier, I say that's a W.
Yep, I agree. All right, then they go at Seton Hall.
At Georgetown. Oh,
yeah,
right?
I skipped one, sorry. At Georgetown first. This one is also one I have trouble with because Georgetown is a trash basketball team, but as a trash basketball team, often beats Creighton at Georgetown. So I don't know what to do with this one at all. Give me some guidance here.
This is a W. This is where the experience of the team, the boys are ready to go. They're feeling good heading into February, and they get a W in DC.
Okay, I'm trusting your judgment there. I'm a little trigger shy on at Georgetown because every year I think they're just gonna boat race them because Georgetown's so bad, and then they end up losing at Georgetown, and it makes me incredibly angry. All right, now we've got the big one, Villanova at home on February 4th. I'm taking a W here. I think Villanova's still going to be good, but Creighton typically plays them very well at home.
Yes, they do, and then we saw what happened last season to kick off Big East play, which I think really surprised the league, kind of put Creighton on the map.
Surprised me, man.
Honestly,
I didn't see that coming.
Yeah. No, heck no. I mean, that game was over, but about 10, 15 minutes into the game. I do think that Creighton gets a W against Villanova here late night or 6:30 tip on Saturday night at the Chai Center. The crowd's going to be rocking. I'm personally looking forward to calling this game, but I think they get a W against Villanova.
Yeah, absolutely. The CHI is going to be tuned up for that one. So I'm excited. I'm excited for that.
Don't make that dollar be your night. Whatever you do, don't make that dollar be your night.
I heard they're bumping it up to $2.
Ooh.
Inflation.
Oh, well, then they better have two. They better have two of them then.
They better, yeah.
They better have two games.
Yeah, that's the rumor out there. I don't know if it's true, but that's the rumor. So hopefully they can figure something out there. All right, so we both agree a W with Villanova. This is the one I skipped to accidentally at Seton Hall. I don't think Seton Hall is very good. I'm going to take a W here.
We just don't play great.
I know.
In New Jersey.
I know.
I think we get – I'll let you decide this one. You say W. I'm going to keep my mouth closed. You move on to the next game. Chalk it up.
We already talked about how I'm not a Shaheen Holloway believer. I'm counting those W's. This is where it starts to get interesting. UConn at home on February 11th. Again, I've given my feelings about UConn. I think that Creighton just has their number. I'm sure that streak will end eventually, but I don't think it's this day. I'm giving Creighton a W here.
I completely agree. Saturday, midday game. I think they do beat the Huskies. I mean, Mac just has their number. I think
it's because they play terrible, ugly basketball.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's the worst. I hate how the Hurleys play basketball. I wish they were illegal. Yeah.
Right, no. I mean, that average team foul count for a UConn game should be 50 for UConn. And it never is. They muck it up. They play ugly.
It's disgusting.
But I am excited to watch this big guy match up, though, with Sanogo and Kalkbrenner. That was a treat last year to watch. And now both guys elevating their game, both with some pretty big preseason accolades. That is going to be a fun matchup inside.
Well, it was especially a treat because Kalkbrenner ate Sanogo's lunch a couple of times last year. So I really enjoyed that portion of it particularly. I believe he was 9 for 26 from the field against Kalkbrenner in two games, which I don't know if you know this, Taylor. Not good.
I'm still doing the math, but according to the calculations that I'm coming up with, that is not very good.
It's pretty bad. He's a center. Most of those shots were pretty close to the hoop.
Yeah.
All right. So we've got a little road trip here at Providence, at St. John's. I'm taking the L at Providence. Creighton plays terrible there.
They do. The Dunkin' Donuts Center has not been kind.
It's cursed. I don't know what it is.
It is cursed. I think they'll split here at Providence, at St. John's. I think this is a 1-1 away road trip here.
All right. I'm gonna put at Providence down as a loss, and I'm going to say we win at St. John's. All right, Marquette at home. Neither of us think Marquette's very good. I think that's a W, right?
I agree. Marquette typically plays very well in Omaha, but I just don't think they have enough firepower, so that's a W for the Jays.
I think they're outgunned there. All right, at Villanova, this one's tough. I'm going to take a loss here, I think.
I would agree if we're being conservative. I don't like the 11 a.m. Eastern or early tip on a Saturday morning at Villanova. We know that they're not going to move this to the Wells Fargo Center. So no. they're going to be playing at the Pav, and Creighton just really struggles in that gym.
They learned their lesson one time in the Wells Fargo Center, and they're never going to go back.
No, they won't. They refuse to do it, and more credit to them. I will say it's going to be very strange not seeing Jay Wright on the sidelines this year.
Yeah, super bizarre. I'm not ready for it.
I'm not either, but I still do think Villanova is going to be Villanova, right? I mean, they've got just such a good historic program. I think that they're going to get the job done in Philadelphia. So we'll chalk that one up as an L.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Bill Guthridge effect from North Carolina. You remember when he took over for Dean Smith? Like, he wasn't a great coach, but they kept that thing rolling for a couple more years, made another Final Four before things kind of fell off the mat under Matt Doherty. But I think you're going to have that. The effects of Jay Wright are going to take a few years to wear off. So I'm not too concerned about Villanova this year. We'll find out what kind of coach Kyle Neptune is probably 2-3 years from now. Last two games of the season, Georgetown and at DePaul. I got WW.
WW.
All right. So we've got 4 conference losses, Xavier, Butler, Providence, and Villanova. I think they're all on the road. I think we're saying they go undefeated at home in conference. Do we want to change that or you feel okay?
I feel really confident. I don't know if you've seen the new Let It Fly Bud Light cans that are going to be served at the CHI Health Center.
I haven't tasted
this year.
One yet, but they're pretty sick looking.
Like me either. But they look like there's no chance Creighton is going to lose at home this year.
I agree. So we've got 4 conference losses. What does that put us at? They're playing, what, 18 conference games? Is that right? Is that number right?
Well, there should be 20 this year, right?
We'll call them 16-4 in conference. That sounds about right for a team that is picked to win the league, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at the historic Villanova teams, right, that have always been picked to finish first and always finish first. Right. They're typically right around that same mark. Right. 15-5, 16-4, pre UConn coming over. Right. I mean, typically 3-5 losses was still getting them first place in this league. So I think that seems like a pretty realistic version of how the season goes. You know, maybe they steal a game on the road and lose one at home here or there. But I do think 4 losses is pretty spot on for this season.
Yeah, I think that's about the right number if you expect them to win the league, which I do. So 4 losses in conference, 5 losses overall. I believe if my math is right, that puts them at 26-5 for the season. Does that sound about right to you based on kind of how you think this team is?
That does. That does sound about right, give or take.
That'll put you in the neighborhood of what, about a 2 seed, depending on how things play out?
Depending on how things play out, I think they'll definitely be in line for that number 2 or number 3 slot. I don't know if number 1 is realistic, but I mean, TBD, right? That's why they play the games.
I think it depends on how good the conference is, honestly. If the conference is up and you're looking at – and if Arkansas is good – it'll depend on how some of these teams play out, right? Because you can, you know, a lot of these 1 seeds are between like 3-6 losses. So Creighton's kind of in that neighborhood. It's really going to depend on how their strength of schedule ends up shaking out based on, you know, is Texas, Arkansas, Texas Tech as good as we think they are in the non-con? No. And is Villanova up? Is Xavier up? You know, what's the bottom half of the league look like from an RPI standpoint? Are they competitive? That kind of the metrics start to determine the difference between like a 1 and a 2 if you're not like 29-2, which I'm not going to predict 29-2 because I'm not that crazy. I'm not that much of a homer, Taylor.
No, I just think there's so many really talented teams at the top.
It's a good league. Right. It's a really good league.
Yeah, it is. And then when you start looking at the landscape of college basketball, right? I mean, you've got North Carolina, Gonzaga, Houston, Kentucky, KU, Baylor, Duke, UCLA, all ranked ahead of Creighton to start the season. I mean, that top 4, that top 5 is really solid. So it'd be hard to see Creighton elevating ahead of them as far as postseason play goes, even if they do come out and win the Big East regular season and Big East conference title, I do find it hard to believe that they'll surpass, you know, those 4-5 teams for a 1 seed this year.
Yeah, even if you look at some teams that you think might not be as good as their preseason rankings, you're talking about jumping, like you said, 4 or 5 teams, which is a tall order. You mentioned real quick here, league titles, regular season, conference tournament. let's use that as a jumping off point to our expectations for this season here. Okay. There's been a lot of talk about Final Fours. The numbers on Creighton and Vegas as a national championship odds are actually pretty low in terms of you're not getting paid off that much if Creighton wins the national championship, which means they're kind of in that. I believe they were, if I remember right from last week, I believe they were tied for fourth in terms of best odds to win the national title. Where's your head at with these expectations? Because these are words that we have not used around Creighton before. Where are you at?
I'm not going to shy away from this, Ravi. I truly think that this season is going to be something special. You know, many people have asked me throughout the course of the summer and fall, you know, where do you think that this Creighton team could realistically end up at the end of the year? And you know, the only thing that I say to them is, you know, book your tickets for Houston.
Preach, brother, preach. We're on the same page here.
That's all I'm saying to people. You know, on paper, you know, I think Creighton probably should have been ranked higher than they were in the preseason.
I agree. I thought they'd be like 6 or 7.
I did too. I almost had them in that 4 to 5 range. I thought they were going to be, I think they're that talented this year. You know, with that comes a whole other set of obstacles that I'm sure we will dive into as the season goes on. But you know, I'm already starting to look for an Airbnb. I've already booked my Southwest tickets down to Houston. I'm already looking at how I can buy tickets for the Final Four. You know, if I have to sell an organ on the black market, I wouldn't be below that. But I am very optimistic for this team, this staff, this schedule that's very difficult non-conference, you know, but I do think that they have all of the pieces. And this is really the first time, you know, that Creighton, you know, really checks off every box. You know, we've had some amazing offensive, you know, explosions throughout the course of a season. We've had individual talent. Last year, they got it done on the defensive end of the defensive end. And I just think that they really have the most complete and total roster, you know, under the Greg McDermott era. And honestly, even in Creighton basketball history.
Yeah, I mean, you can go further back because the Greg McDermott era is the best era of Creighton basketball history. And so if it's the best in the Greg McDermott era, it's the best in Creighton basketball history. You know, there's three teams in my lifetime that I think have been good enough to make a Final Four for Creighton. Not the Doug McDermott team, ironically enough. That team had a lot of limitations because the roster was not created to be a, you know, a Big East roster, a Final Four roster. That was a Missouri Valley roster, and it was a very good Missouri Valley roster, and Doug elevated them to where they ended up. But that was not a Final Four roster. The ones that I think were that Justin Patton, Mo Watson, Kyrie Thomas, Marcus Foster team back in 16-17, I believe it was. I believe the 2020 team was Final Four good, and I believe this year's team is. Now, the first two had their limitations. The first one, 16-17, didn't have a ton of depth.
No.
And so you might have ran into some troubles. As we saw, Mo Watson goes down, the season falls apart, right? They still make the NCAA tournament, but they were not nearly the same team. The 2020 team obviously had the Marcus Zagorowski injury and the world came to an end, so we didn't really see how that played out. But you had really no legitimate big man on that roster in terms of, I think Kalkbrenner was playing like 10 minutes a game, if I'm remembering right. Mm-hmm. But Christian Bishop was playing a ton of minutes as a 6'7" center. You had Denzel Mahoney, who I love. Like, I love that small ball lineup. I was preaching about that small ball lineup, right? But there's some limitations to that lineup as well. And so you didn't have the lineup versatility of that roster to face some if a team just was huge, you were going to have some trouble with that roster. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you had a depth issue again. Marcus Zagorowski goes out. You didn't really have a ton of depth at point guard there. This year, neither of those are concerns for me. Like, I obviously you don't want to have any injuries and you don't want to have to deal with anything like that. But we saw last year when Ryan Nemhard went down, Trey Alexander's just fine at point guard. And you've got more options this year than you did last year. You've got Sharif, you got Ben Stolzberg, you got Francisco Farabello. Baylor Shireman can run the offense from the forward spot. Like, you've got a lot of options there. So I look at this team and I'm like, I don't see a whole lot of weaknesses here that I should be concerned about.
No, I completely agree. And, you know, I think one of the most underrated parts is just that every day in practice, right, you've got 10 guys that are all very talented at what they do. And the ability for that first team to go against the second team and the second team to go against the first team all season long. I mean, that only takes, you know, the talent level, the teamwork, the leadership from here, and it only takes it up. And that's where, you know, if you can gel at the right time, and you, I mean, you know this, Ravi, right? Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily always the most talented team that makes the Final Four, right? It's the team that's playing the best, that has amazing guard play, and is finding different ways to win basketball games.
Well, that's the thing. You mentioned guard play there. There was a time where Creighton's guard play wasn't good enough to get him into a Final Four. That's not the case anymore. Look at all the guards we've talked about. Guard play is this team's strength. Plus, you've got a potential first rounder at forward. Plus, you've got two more NBA guys at the other forward in the center spot. Mm-hmm. And the guards are probably still the strength of your team. Like, I'm never going to predict a national championship because that's kind of absurd. And in my mind, once you get to a Final Four in men's basketball, because of the matchups and teams get hot and things like that, like a Final Four and a national championship in terms of expectations are kind of equivalent in my mind. Mm-hmm. But I do. I said it on 1620 The Zone earlier today. I said it as soon as last season was over. I'm sticking by it. This is a Final Four team.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I think one of the things that stood out to me last year, it was a few different post-game conferences. And, you know, after the game, you know, John Bishop and I are able to go ahead and interview some of the key players to that game. And I think it was three or four games in a row where we had interviewed, I think it was Arthur, and then it was Trey, and then it was R2. Mm-hmm. And they just talked about, because they were thrust into such a big-time role from the beginning as freshmen, you know, halfway through that season, they already felt like they were sophomores as far as standing goes in college. And so now you've got this team of sophomores that really is more like juniors. Mm-hmm. And that's where we see some of the biggest steps and leaps is from that sophomore season to that junior year. And so the explosion and the development of talent from, you know, those three guys in particular, not even talking about Kalkbrenner, not talking about Baylor Shireman, mm-hmm. not talking about the depth on the bench. Those three guys that led this group last year, I mean, this is their time, right? And, you know, I personally, you know, I hope that it comes together for them. It's going to be fantastic to watch all year. It's very exciting to be in Omaha, such a great basketball city, exciting time to be a Jays fan. And I cannot wait to see where this season takes them.
Yeah, I mean, I really believe not just that this team is going to be really good, but I think they're going to play really beautiful basketball, which makes me as excited as anything. Like, I hate watching bad basketball. I'm sure you could tell what I'm talking about, UConn and the Hurleys and all. Like, I hate ugly, bad basketball so much. That's why I'm a Creighton fan, because they play beautiful basketball, right? Mm-hmm. And this might be as just beautiful of a basketball team and as far as how they play. As we've seen at Creighton, and that's saying something, because they've had some really beautiful basketball they've played at Creighton over the past 10-15 years. So I'm really excited about that part. So those are our expectations for the season. You wanna kick off our first pay that man of the season?
Pay that man, Ravi. If we go back and we look at the stat sheet. Should we take a look at that stat sheet?
Yeah. So
let me explain
to the people what this is first. So we're in a new era of college basketball now. the NIL era. People are making that money. We love that. We love that for them. They're maximizing their talents and profiting off of it. So instead of player of the games, we're going to call them the pay that man. Whoever had the best game, the best week, whatever you want to call it, we're going to say, hey, NIL people, collective, boosters, pay that man.
All right. Well, for that exhibition game.
My candidate. You have yours? Okay.
I have. God, there's so many, man.
There really are. A lot of good efforts that night.
They really were. You know, I think as far as my pay that man goes, I got to stick with my main man, Trey Alexander. 6 of 8 from the floor.
Okay.
3 of 4 from 3-point range. We talked about his development as a 3-point shooter this season.
And he punched on a dude.
And that was scary.
He stole AOC's little brother's soul.
Mm-hmm. That was not pretty. I would love to see a couple of those on SportsCenter this year. But I think if NIL is coming in, that pool of collective money needs to shell out a little bit more to Trey Alexander.
Okay, so my pay that man was Baylor Shireman. He had a ridiculous line, 14, 10, and 7. That man is going to drop a couple triple-doubles this year. I'm just warning you ahead of time. It's going to happen. He's going to shoot about 50% from three this year because he's going to be wide open all the time. He shot 47 last year, and he was the only player on that team in South Dakota State. He's going to shoot pretty close to 50% this year from three-point range. And you got to give me that Larry Bird, no-look, over-the-shoulder touch pass to Kalkbrenner. I mean, pay that man.
All right. I can't hate on that.
We can pay them both. Let's do it.
We can pay them both. But, I mean, then you can't forget. I mean, you can't forget about Arthur Kaluma's line either. I mean, Art was 6 of 7. Kalkbrenner was 7 of 9. I mean, it was
an efficient night for a lot of guys.
Maybe we shouldn't get that hyped up. It's an exhibition game.
I don't care.
The fans are excited. The players are excited because they're getting paid. Let's pay that man.
All right, we'll go with Ty, pay that man for the start of the season because it was an exhibition. We'll feel generous. we'll pay Trey and our guy Baylor for that one. Well, Taylor, we went a little longer than we said we're going to. We had to do a little season preview.
We had to. You got to give the fans what they want, Robbie.
We do. And I think what they want to end this is a little life update, right?
Life update. I love it. See, we already got our segments figured out. This is beautiful. Did.
We got some feedback last year. People like hearing about our lives a little bit. So it's been a long time since we talked to you. We're going on like 7 months here since you heard from us. So life update. Taylor, I know you got a lot of stuff going on. Like, life update for you.
Life update for me. I'll keep it simple, but was blessed with a beautiful and healthy daughter on October 6th. My wife and I's first child. And just could not be any more excited to be part of that dad crew. I'm part of the girl dad club.
There you go.
Little Ruby Monroe, she's awesome. She's already stole my heart. And it's actually pretty funny. I had one of my buddies sent me a pair of New Balances today. So I am officially official. But no, super excited to be part of that club, and just couldn't be more grateful that we're home and happy and healthy.
Dude, those New Balances are comfy, though. You know what I mean?
They are so. I know. I texted him.
I know they're ugly, but they're so comfy.
Oh, I texted him right after, and it was like the tongue of the shoe was like halfway up my shin. But I was like, I hate this so much because they're so comfortable.
That's the thing. That's how they get you.
I know. It's crazy. So we'll see how often I wear them. But shout out to my guy, Max Herter, for sending me some New Balances.
There you go.
Not part of the show. This is not a paid ad.
This is not sponsored.
Sponsored by New Balance. But if they wanted to send some shoes.
Pay that man. If they want to pay that man.
I wouldn't say no. What about you? What about you, Robbie? What's been going on, man?
Yeah. So you know, you said at the beginning of the podcast, you spent the summer like working out, getting some shots up. I'll be honest, I got addicted to pickleball this summer.
Oh.
I've been playing a ton of pickleball. I've been playing like 4 times a week. I went from like, I played for the first time like middle of July and instantly was addicted. Play like 4 times a week until it got cold. Now I'm finding like indoor places to play. It's semi taken over my life a little bit. And I'm not even mad about it. It's super fun. I used to play tennis and like it's really hard to stay sharp with tennis because it's such like a technical game and things like that. Pickleball, you get a lot of the things I like about tennis, the strategy, the shot making, the movement, but it's a little bit easier to stay sharp. And so it's super fun. I've been playing a ton of pickleball, not nearly as impressive as having a child.
I didn't do anything to have a child, Robbie. I basically just stood there and held my wife's hand. So
you could have been playing the pickleball the whole time.
I could have had one hand here and I could have been Forrest Gump. I could have been Tom Hanks and Forrest Gump playing ping pong by myself.
So yeah, I've been doing that. You know, been doing a ton of shows over at 1620. Since Damon left, and just trying to fill in there and hopefully get the full-time job over there. But that's about it, man. Just pickleball and radio. That's all I do.
That's it, man. It's an easy game, man. It's an easy game.
All right. Well, we will talk to you guys. Let's see. We play on Monday against St. Thomas. And then They play one or two games that week. They play.
I think they're Thursday, yeah, right?
Thursday two against North Dakota. So we'll probably come to you after the North Dakota game, I would guess. Make sure we get those in for you. Like I said, we're going to try and bring these to you once a week minimum, so that you're caught up on everything going on within the Creighton men's basketball program. Taylor, anything to add before we sign off?
No, just say click, subscribe, come listen to us, Jace 24/7. Very excited for this basketball season, as I know a lot of Creighton fans are as well, and happy to be doing this with my guy, Ravi. It's going to be a fun season, man.
Oh, I forgot to tell you, we're going to be even a little bit more connected this year. Are you ready? So, not directly, but Christmas Day, I heard you bailed on my guy, John Bishop, for color commentary. Guess who's filling in, baby?
he's getting the call up, the color commentary duo.
I think I'm the first non-player to do it.
Well, don't mess it up, okay? Well, like, you won't get invited back.
I don't want to ruin it for all the other non-athletic schlubs like me that I want to do this someday. All the pickleballers that couldn't be real ballers.
All the pickleballers. Well, please don't do too well, because then I'm going to be out of a job, and then my daughter's not going to have. I'm not going to have enough money to pay for my daughter's diapers. So
I wouldn't do that to you. Okay. I wouldn't do that to you. I'm sure you're safe. You're safe hanging out with John, but he's just like, you know what? I think I'm going to have to do Christmas Day alone. I was like, John, my guy. I got you.
I'm here. Let me take the reins. Oh, that's awesome, man. That's awesome.
So I'm sure we'll be seeing a lot of each other at the CHI, but we'll also be seeing a lot of all you Jays fans out there. Can't wait for this season. Super excited for it. And I guess all that's left is roll Jays.
Roll Jays, baby. Let it fly.